documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today is the 1st of April, 2017, and it's good to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. April Fool's Day. I thought April 15th was April Fool's Day. Anyway, welcome to Govern America, ladies and gentlemen. Lots to talk about, and your phone calls are welcome as well. 844-646-8376. That's toll-free, 844-6-GOVERN. And Vicki Davis is here. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning, Darren. Yeah, I'm looking forward to today. I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about.
Oh, it never ends. It's unbelievable.
I know, I can't keep up.
Nobody can keep up anymore. It just keeps going on and on and on and on. And, you know, I was up to, I think, 5 o'clock this morning, and then I took a brief nap. And you could spend a lifetime. And, you know, I've often thought, you know, I could do a better job if I had more time. But you can't, I mean, unless you do a daily show, there's really no way that you can possibly cover all the stuff that you have to cover in a given week. And those of us who work jobs outside of this, we don't have time to do a daily show.
Yeah,
I think I would go bonkers anyway.
I don't work. I mean, I do this every day, all day. But even still, though, I can't keep up with all of it. You know, by the time you listen to, you know, congressional hearings, I watched probably, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 hours of congressional hearings, and I watched the German Marshall Forum over in Brussels. I watched some of those. There is just so much, you know, plus trying to keep up with what other people are doing, you know. There's just too much.
Yeah, that's been my complaint, I think, for years, but it's really accelerated. I'm just astounded by it all. Well, anyway, let's dive right in, shall we? I don't know if there was, you, just before we came on the air, you said you were asking me if I seen some video, and I we ended up running out of time.
Oh, yeah, that was the congressional hearing that I was talking about, the Senate Intelligence Committee. Normally, they don't really work in public. They don't hold very many public hearings, but they are really intense on this whole Russia hacking the election system thing. They even brought out an old Cold War warrior who was an expert in Soviet propaganda. You know, he's actually a history professor, but they brought him out, and his expertise goes back to Soviet propaganda, you know, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know, and I'm listening to this guy, I'm thinking, wow, you know, if our members of Congress are so desperate that they bring this guy out, you know, for his expertise, then we are really in trouble, because what he was talking about are things like trolls on the internet and bots and, you know, disinformation. And, I mean, my goodness, I've been on the internet seriously, you know, researching things since about 2002, 2003. And there were trolls back then, only I called them Cato trolls. You know, mm-hmm. because I was working on the issue of outsourcing and the importation of H-1Bs, and there were Cato people all over the internet, you know, and on the free trade issue, there were a lot of trolls promoting the idea that free trade was good, you know, and so...
Yeah, well, we sure have learned a lot since then, haven't we?
Yeah, well, they actually, those trolls actually got me in warrior mode, I would say, in war mode, because what they were spreading was disinformation. But it was coming from people in our own country.
Yeah, people with money to make from the whole process.
Yeah, that's it.
It seems to always be those turncoats who are profiting and cashing in on the whole globalization scheme. And I just wish we had people of integrity. This is the biggest problem. It's like the Bible says, the love of money is the root of all evil. Truer words can't be spoken, because we're seeing that everywhere. If
when they agreed to globalization, it was the death of integrity, honesty and integrity, because there's just too much money to be made.
I think the honesty and integrity died before the globalization, but that's just me.
Well, that could be. Maybe I just didn't notice it. Because I was working, busy working.
Well, that's the problem. And Americans have been working for their whole lifetimes, for generations. They've kept us involved in wars. They've kept us involved in earning a living, keeping our head above water, this notion of an American dream. And we've lived in la-la land for so many years, thinking that we could do better for ourselves and for our children if we just work hard. And it really was the American dream. I wrote an article back a while. In fact, it's still up on News with Views, I think. Waking up from the American dream, and that was all about that. All the things throughout history that Americans have been involved in, and we've never paid attention to the state of the country. And now it's biting us in the hind end.
Yeah, well, you don't expect a member of your family to turn on you. And that's kind of what it was like for me. I mean, we had a country, we are all Americans, and our government is doing the best that they can for Americans, right? But it turns out they really weren't. Yeah. They were not doing it for our country. They were doing it for their own reasons, their own purposes. And some of them have to do with selling out our country. And others are just, in it to make money for themselves.
Yeah, I did happen to catch some hearings. But before we get to that, Ron had sent me over a story, which I found very disturbing this morning. A U.S. court grants human rights to chimpanzees. Now, we could laugh at this, except that it's really not funny. The precedent that this kind of thing is setting, and I think it's going to be the beginning of a lot of things like this.
What makes me wonder if they're doing genetic engineering. Does that chimpanzee have any human genes in it?
Well, the Daily Mail out of the UK says last week a revolutionary decision was made in a U.S. court. Chimpanzees were acknowledged to have rights of their own. It is the first time legal rights of any kind have ever been accorded to anything other than a human. The story started in 2013 when an organization called the Non-Human Rights Project filed a lawsuit in the New York Supreme Court on behalf of four chimps kept for research by Stony Brook University. The eventual conclusion of Justice Barbara Jaffe was that they were not to be treated as property but as legal persons. Not as persons with full human rights, but as persons with a right not to be held in captivity and a right not to be owned. Now, if you folks don't think that this is going to be extended to your dogs, your cats, they're already saying that people are already promoting the idea that you're not supposed to use the word pet ownership.
But that's, it won't be safe.
It's custodial.
It won't be safe to go outside because those people will let their pit bulls run free.
Yeah. Or in the case of my neighbor, he's already doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I turn around, his dogs are in my yard. But anyway, the fact that The fact is that chimpanzees really are almost human, the Daily Mail says. And they go on, and it sounds like they're all promoting the idea of evolution. But the point is it's not going to stop at chimpanzees. I mean, this is the foot in the door, and here it is. I mean, for many, many years, and now they got a court precedent. Hopefully this will be struck down, but with the state of our court system anymore, I wouldn't be holding my breath.
Yeah, Stony Brook, that's New York, isn't it?
I believe you. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
So, there it is.
Wow.
Anyway, we were talking about the some of the hearings on Capitol Hill. You know, I don't know about you, but I am so sick and tired of this Russian thing. I'm sick of talking about it. But it's what do you do?
I'm wondering where they're going with it, because everything that they were saying they should have known about, you know, about a decade and a half ago. Hacking is not new. I just wonder if there is it budget time. Is this a dial? I mean, we already know that there was a dialectic in play with this hacking deal to nationalize the voter registration rolls.
Mm-hmm.
But is it budget time? Are they going for a lot more money in the budget for cybersecurity? That's kind of one thing that I picked up from at least what one of the people said mm-hmm. in that hearing. And, you know, they need a lot more money, they need to hire a lot more people, and they need to not be so picky about the people that they hire, because what they really need are smart people.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, not all the smart people have degrees.
That's right. In fact, I'd say the degree is a mark against you. Anyway, Judge Andrew Napolitano, I talked about him last week being sidelined by Fox News. Well, he's back. I got a feeling he's too much of a ratings draw. Last week we told you that he cited three intelligence sources who said Obama used the British intelligence agency GCHQ to avoid reporting requirements in surveillance against incoming Trump administration officials. He's back, and he's standing by the story.
Good morning to you. You've had a few quiet days.
Yes, I have.
You likely needed them.
Yes.
You put out a statement, I think it was 10 days ago,
right,
saying you were confident in the story that you reported here in the past month.
Yes.
You still stand by that? Or
yes,
I do,
and the sources stand by it. And the American public needs to know more about this rather than less, because a lot of the government's surveillance authorities will expire in the fall, and there will be a great debate about how much authority we want the government to have to surveil us. And the more the American public knows about this, the more informed their and Congress's decisions will be.
Well, so no change then?
Correct.
And we'll see how the story plays out.
We will, yeah.
In time.
Yeah, I think
right.
A lot more is going to come.
Okay, so there you go. Now,
that might be the reason for this whole Russian hacking thing, you know?
Yeah.
They're just doing it well ahead of time, because it takes a long time to educate the public on these systems issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, Putin participated in a forum on climate change and was asked about U.S. accusations that the Russians interfere with the elections. And I think it's only fair that we hear from the since he's the accused, we should hear from the accused. He basically said, well, let's see. Let's hear his response. I can't get it to play. I would blame the Russians, except that I got a feeling the Russians would want this to play.
Ronald Reagan once, debating about taxes and addressing the Americans, said, watch my lips. He said, no, watch my lips, no.
So there you go. He said, read my lips, no. and he said it was Reagan. It wasn't Reagan. It was actually Bush, but we won't hold that against him.
It's kind of silly to think that only the Russians could think of disinfo tactics and mass manipulation of perception. I mean, you know, the American people are pretty creative.
Yeah, well, that's the American way. I mean, isn't that the whole purpose of the Voice of America? I mean,
sure, there's opportunity out there. I don't know where the money is, but you know, there's opportunity to do all kinds of stuff. As a matter of fact, like I said, I got into this to fight disinformation. So,
yeah. Well, didn't we all? I mean,
unless the infiltrators,
you know, in our midst, of course. But anyway. He went on to talk about the Russian. Let's see. He went on to talk about the Russian government, and I was reaching out to Congress.
We hear infinite and groundless allegations and accusations of interference, alleged interference. We've been talking cybersecurity, but do you know that us long ago proposed to the American side that an agreement should be elaborated and signed, an intergovernmental agreement on cybersecurity? It was our proposal. The Americans rejected, turned it down. Why? Probably because they just benefit from accusing us to match their political cycles. Why? So, as regards speaking in front of that committee, like in Congress or in Russian Parliament, the State Duma, I know for sure our MPs on many occasions turned to the US Congress and Senate, inviting them to come to Moscow and saying that they were ready to come to Washington, D.C. to have meetings and frank talks and discuss the relevant things about bilateral and international agenda. But they received no response, and they made these proposals two or three times. One of them was made of late.
So he says they've been reaching out to Congress, you know, trying to patch things up, trying to improve relations, and they've got no response. So, no surprise there, huh? It's a political agenda. They're pushing us toward war, and there's really nothing they can do, the Russians, to try to patch things up at this point in time, because you're dealing with politicians who don't care.
Well,
they have a war agenda.
The Russians don't have the money the communist Chinese do. So all of our politicians are, you know, they're sucking up to the communist Chinese.
Yeah, well, I think they're also
in the pocket. Chinese want to build our infrastructure.
Yeah, well, they're also in the pocket of the military-industrial complex, too. Now, Dmitry Peskov, Putin's right-hand man, as he's described, he was on Good Morning America. He called allegations of Russian involvement in the U.S. elections slanderous propaganda.
All those fake news, having nothing beneath and having no evidence, were...
By the way, I love how this fake news has now gone international.
...nothing else but slander. And that's why we'll continue to suggest to everyone insisting that Russia was interfering in this or that way into domestic affairs of the United States, we will suggest them to read Mr. Putin's lips.
One of the conclusions is that Russia was trying to hurt Hillary Clinton and help Donald Trump. You've said yourself that it's natural that Putin would prefer Trump. Why?
It's very simple. Listen, for example, we have a variety of politicians in every country, and we have a variety of politicians in the United States. Some of them are saying that we are in favor of reestablishing good relationship with Russia. We think that we have lots of problems, and we are sure that we will not be able to agree upon everything, but we are sure that we have to have a dialogue with the Russians. This is one flank. The other flank is those who say, no, Russians are our enemy, and we are strictly against any contacts with them, and we don't give a damn about their interests, and we reject any possibility of cooperation, even when it is in our own interests, let's say in a field of combating terror. So which one would be more sympathetic for you? For us, the one who is saying that, yes, we disagree in lots of things, but we're going to talk to Russians.
So President Putin,
this one is more sympathetic for us. So the reason is very simple.
So President Putin did prefer Donald Trump.
He's not even listening to the guy. I mean, he just went through his reasoning as to why Putin and the Russians are favoring Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. Hey, we're going to go with whoever works with us. We're going to go over whoever wants to pay attention to us and not be against us. And he turns around and says, so you do favor Trump. I mean, this guy's...
Well, that's when you know that they have a script and they've
exactly.
got to stick to their script.
Exactly, sticking to the script. All right.
No, it's not about preferring someone. It's about whose ideas are more close to you and whose ideas are more welcomed in Russian public opinion.
Public opinion here in the United States about President Putin is quite unfavorable. Only 9% of Americans in a recent poll have a favorable opinion of President Putin.
As if that matters, by the way.
Only 9% see Russia as an ally. Is that a problem for President Putin?
It's not a problem, but this is something that we're sorry about again. We understand those figures because for how many months? For more than a year, American audience have been a target for severe anti-Russian propaganda. And they were, of course, they.
In other words, it's your fault, media.
Felt victim of that propaganda, and that's why lots of Americans, they do think that yes, Russian hackers are everywhere. Russian hackers are in every fridge.
I love that. Russian hackers are in every fridge. Hey, Russian hacker, away from the ketchup bottle.
Russian hackers are in every iron, and so on and so forth. But this is not true. Those are fake news, and this is slander.
All right, so finally, a little discussion on the state of U.S.-Russian relations.
Naming sanctions, let's remember decisions that were taken by the then administration during their last days in the White House. Extradition of Russian diplomats, I would even say occupation of Russian diplomatic property in New York and Washington. This is something that was never seen in diplomatic affairs in the world for lots and lots of decades. Let's imagine a property of the Russian Federation covered with diplomatic immunity was occupied by American Secret Service agents. I mean, well, is it friendly? I'm afraid no. I'm afraid not, and it's not friendly. It's not legal in terms of international law. So, of course, it was a very significant damage for our bilateral relations, organized as a farewell party by the then administration in Washington.
If we're at the lowest point in history, that means we're in a new Cold War.
New Cold War, well, maybe even worse. Maybe even worse, taking into account actions of the present presidential administration.
Worse than the Cold War?
Well, of course.
So, what do you think so far, Vicky?
Yeah, I agree.
I think it is a new
Cold War, and it is worse than it was during the 1960s. Because it's being fought all on civilian turf. And civilians are getting, I mean, it's not military to military, it's civilians, military, government,
and cyber.
Nonprofits, corporations. So, you know, it is a world war, and all players are on the field.
Yeah.
And nobody knows who is who. You know, what Putin did that I'm sure really irritated Washington, D.C., is that he banned NGOs from his country, threw him out of his country, as he should have. I mean, I cheered for him that he did that, because it's the USAID. They hire these LGBT people to stir up social dissent, and that's how they get the civil wars going, you know, that ultimately leads to color revolutions and changes in government.
Yeah.
And to now, the globalists.
Now, there's this Dennis Montgomery guy, and you had sent me some information. I had stumbled across this last night. Actually, I think somebody sent me this. Department of Justice lawyer just leaked James Comey's worst nightmare on live TV. I don't know if it's really James Comey's worst nightmare. But this Dennis Montgomery, apparently, Judicial Watch sent Congress some, you know, that hearing that we played audio from last week, which was chaired by Devin Nunes. Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch sent Devin Nunes this letter at, you know, trying to get him to ask Comey about this Dennis Montgomery and some of the things he was saying. Reading from the letter, he says, "You may recall that I won landmark decisions before the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, before the Honorable Richard Leon preliminary in joining the illegal, warrantless, and mass surveillance of U.S. citizens and lawful residents within the domestic United States. Freedom Watch Incorporated here addresses the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence hearings, which began on March 20th, investigating in part whether President Donald Trump and his associates were wiretapped, that is, illegally and unconstitutionally spied upon in general, both before and after President Trump's inauguration by the administration of his predecessor, former President Barack Obama, and about alleged Russian collaboration with President Trump aides in the run-up to the 2016 presidential election and thereafter. As General Counsel of Freedom Watch, previously the founder of Judicial Watch and former federal prosecutor at the U.S. Department of Justice, I petitioned this committee to have Chairman Devin Nunes and the committee question the FBI Director James Comey about apparent illegal and unconstitutional surveillance of prominent Americans such as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, other justices, 156 judges, prominent businessmen, and others such as President Donald Trump." Anyway, he goes on here and has urged them to ask about 47 hard drives and over 600 million pages of information. Unfortunately, Devin Nunes apparently ignored this letter, because he didn't ask any of the questions that were outlined in this thing. Tell you what, we got to take the bottom of the hour break, and we'll continue here on the other side, and I'll see if you have any responses on Dennis Montgomery. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks, and we'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. The website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. My email address, radio@governamerica.com. And Vicki's website is thetechnocratictyranny.com. And your phone calls are welcome. 1-844-646-8376. That's 844-6-GOVERN. As we continue on here, Vicki, I don't know if you had any thoughts on the Dennis Montgomery thing. I know that you had sent me some information on it as well. This whistleblower.
Well, with those congressional hearings, they really are political theater. I've been watching C-SPAN almost from the beginning when they first started in 1979. You know, of course, I was working, but I was always kind of fascinated with watching hearings and stuff. You know, a lot of people's eyes glaze over, but I've always enjoyed watching them. But increasingly, especially over the last 10 years or so, the hearings really just are political theater.
Yeah.
So they already know what information they want to get out to the public. And so there are very, very few surprises in the hearings ever.
Well, I would say
occasionally.
A lot of times, what if you watch long enough, buried deep in those hearings, and this is why it's worthwhile to watch. If you watch long enough, a lot of times you're right. It's a lot of grandstanding, a lot of time wasting, but then they'll have a little nugget of information hidden in there somewhere, and that's where it starts. Oh, okay, I didn't know that, and so I do think it's worth people's time.
Oh, I do too. As a matter of fact, that's how I found out about Project Destiny, when the chairman of AIG, the insurance company, testified to Congress about AIG's meltdown. He mentioned Project Destiny, and when I researched it, I found out that Project Destiny was an initiative by the pharmaceutical industry to have pharmacists be frontline healthcare providers. So if you have a problem you think that just needs medication, you just go in to talk to the local pharmacist, and he'll whip you up something.
A little witch's brew.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting that with all this going on with this Russian stuff, you would think that Trump would actually be under investigation. Wouldn't that be your impression?
Well, I think that, that's what they're trying to imply, that he is, but actually...
Okay, listen to this. This is Paul Ryan. He was point-blank asked this question. This is his response.
I don't believe that he is. So I don't think that he is under investigation. No one has suggested that he is, and not even in a vague way. I don't believe that he is.
Okay. Now, that was Paul
Ryan. I have heard other things that they are actually... There was a call for an investigation into Trump yesterday, and I can't remember where I heard that. But they really want to dive into... Trump's business dealings over in Russia. Of course, if they do that, then they'll have to include a lot of other politicians, because when the Soviet Union collapsed, that's what the United States did, was to send people in over there with foreign direct investment money.
Yeah, that's how the State Department operates.
Right, to buy up all of the Russian assets that could be procured. So,
yep.
If Trump did it, he was not alone.
Well, and arguably, you might say it's smart. That's what business people do. You know, they take advantage of the current, political climate, current economic climate. By the way, here's a Democrat, Joe Manchin, his response to the same question.
No, President Trump's name directly has not come up in any of our briefings that I have been attending, and I don't think I've missed any of them. With that being said, but everybody involved in this whole process and the campaign is being looked upon and basically are coming in and will be coming in to answer questions.
So, apparently, he's not being looked at all. Which I found kind of interesting.
Yeah, the whole thing, everything that's going on is anomalous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Trump came in with one agenda, but then his choices for his cabinet indicate a different direction. You know, so it's almost like his rhetoric isn't matching the actions. And the same is true with Congress. You know, they say they're not investigating Trump, but by definition, if they're investigating all of his cabinet choices and they're trying to connect them with Russian operatives, then actually Trump is de facto being investigated.
Right. They're nibbling around the edges without actually chewing up the core yet.
Right.
Exactly. Yet. Let's tell you what, let's go to Kansas. We got a call on the line, and hello. Come on in. You're welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, Darren.
Hey.
Vicki, this is Sherry in Kansas.
Hey, Sherry. Always good to hear from you.
This whole deal about the Russian thing, I think they're just so desperate to keep this stuff about the pedophile ring coming out, because I really think that's the worst thing that the Hillary Clinton, John Podesta emails exposed. And, you know, with the Franklin cover-up, they had made that movie, Conspiracy of Silence, that was going to be shown on cable TV and expose this. They at the time, a cable bill was going to Congress, and that's because that show was already scheduled on the in the TV Guide deal, is what I heard. And they were able to do something on that cable legislation to keep them from showing that film, and the film was never really completely done.
Now, that conspiracy of silence, that's about Hollywood, isn't it?
No, it was about the Franklin cover-up.
Okay.
Hollywood probably came into it.
Okay, but I must be thinking of a different documentary, because there's one also, I think by the same name, that exposed how the scumbags in Hollywood operate. And
yeah, and this one was done by the BBC. The other thing is, but they're just so desperate, because that's their whole blackmail deal on Congress.
Yep.
If that comes out, there's so many people in Congress that are being blackmailed with little children.
Yeah, it's a dirty little secret, isn't it?
Yeah, and I do believe that's true. I do believe that's true, because I know someone here in town who lived next door to a house that she said they brought small children in. And she thought there were bad things going on in that house. And she watched it, you know, from her house. So I do believe it. I believe that they are blackmailing our public officials.
Yeah, Sean Stone on Watching the Hawks, this week he interviewed a guy, I think he was Australian. He had a British-type accent, but I think he might have been Australian. But he was, he had been caught selling ecstasy, I guess, here in the United States. And he was in American prison, and I'm not sure where he was, but for 6 years. And he was telling about, you know, how things go in prison. And he said that in the prisoners, if you are in there for pedophilia, and or drive-by shooting, pedophilia, you'll just get killed. They have a code of honor there.
That's right. That's right. There is honor among thieves, and that's the one thing they won't tolerate.
Yeah, that's amazing that they have more of a code of honor than our judicial.
Than the scumbag politicians.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I really think that's what it is, because, you know, the slave trade is has been going on for years, but I really think the war part is part of this. You know, think of how many children lose their parents in war, and then you don't know what happens to these children.
Yeah, and I was just reading.
I really think that's part of it, too.
I was just reading recently that there's been a whole boatload of them that have come up missing from the D.C. area. So you got to ask yourself the question.
Yeah, I saw that too. 500 since the first of the year?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
This is an epidemic.
Anyway, that's all I had.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate the call. Thanks, Sherry. Always good hearing
all
from
right.
you. Blessings. Yeah, this is it's really disturbing to think that these people, the people that are making the decisions for our country, are so debased, so morally bankrupt, that they're susceptible to this kind of thing. And you got to ask yourself the question, if they're possibly able to be bribed and blackmailed, especially the blackmailing of, you know, by whoever controls them, by the shadow government, by the intelligentsia, what about foreign powers as well? You know, you know, it's interesting. I saw something recently, well, I think it was just yesterday, something about Vladimir Putin now is threatening to make things public that Obama asked him to keep secret. And it didn't go into any more than that as I recall, but I think I probably have it here somewhere. Maybe I'll stick it in the show notes if I can find it. But there are secrets that evidently that Obama asked Putin to keep secret, and he's now ticked off enough at the United States that he says, you know what, I'm going to make it public if this keeps going on. So,
well, good. I hope he does.
I hope he does, too, because, look, we're at the point now where we know that these people are not operating in our interests. So.
Right. They don't even do us the courtesy of pretense.
No, not anymore.
Yeah, they just, you know, it's like we don't even count.
We don't. We don't.
So,
how's it feel to be a world citizen? Tell you what, we got John in Tennessee, I think, on the line here.
It's me. Good morning.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning.
You know, I seem to remember, Darren, a couple different topics, but I seem to remember a few years ago there was a black congressman out of California. I can't remember her name. Sheila something or other.
Sheila Jackson Lee?
Do you remember that? Yes, Sheila Jackson Lee said something to the effect of how much information Obama had access to, and these people would really be surprised, basically, that he was going to hang it over their head. Now, when I went in the military, they taught us about communication security and all the rest of it. Don't say anything that's going to put you in a position where you may be blackmailed. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, the previous caller has nailed it, because these people are so involved in things that we can't even imagine the extent of the darkness of the people that we're counting to lead this nation. Where many people are saying, you know, they can do it. If we just get behind them, they can do it. I'm telling you, up to and including child sacrifice, the pedophilia gate, or the pedigate, or whatever, pizza gate in D.C., was more than just pedophile rings, folks. It was literally consuming, and I'm sorry to be so dark, consuming the bodies of children. I'm convinced,
John,
that this...
Let me interrupt you here, because a couple of weeks ago, somebody in the chat room posted this website, which when I went to it, it looked to me, and I thought it was a hoax to begin with. And the more I read on the website, the more I believe now it's not a hoax. I think it's called Cannibal Club. Have you seen this?
Oh,
no,
my God.
I haven't.
Cannibalclub.org. Go there. Check this out.
Well, the word cannibal means priest of Baal. Okay? Mm-hmm. Child sacrifice. Offering your kids up. I'm convinced, Darren, that this whole idea, supposedly last year with Planned Parenthood, mm-hmm. and ordering baby body parts for scientific research, baloney. I call crap on it. They were going to the butcher store. Like I would go to, who better to have access to human flesh than Planned Parenthood? Late-term abortions. You know, I like calf's liver. And I like chicken liver on occasion. Well, these people believe that they derive power, longevity, energy from consuming flesh of prepubescent people. Look it up. It's not make-believe, folks. These people are doing things that we can't even begin to conceive how evil they are. And, yeah, they're all over the world. They're all over the nation. And they're very heavily involved in Washington politics and the government of the United States. How on earth can you look at someone like Lindsey Graham and look at his eyes and, you know, the old adage that we use, eyes are a window to a man's soul, you know, and we look at him and we say, that's some really dark-looking eyes. And I don't mean color dark. I mean, you can look into a person.
Well, I always said the same thing about Dick Cheney, whom I call Despot Dick.
I believe a lot of them. Nancy Pelosi, when she became Speaker of the House, I said out loud watching her, look at her eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
these
you can look at Dick Cheney's eyes, and this guy, he looks like he's demon-possessed. I mean, it's like you're staring hell right in the face.
Absolutely, and we got to realize where we're at. We got to realize what truth is. And in order to have something that we consider to be good or extremely good or heavenly or beautiful, in order for us to even comprehend what beauty is or what heavenly is, evil of the same magnitude has to exist. That's how we measure hot and cold. equal and opposite. So for something that we consider to be, go ahead, I don't want to dominate, but this is something.
No, no, really I was just going to agree with you and say you're exactly right. Equal and opposite. For the best of the best, there is an equal and opposite.
And we look at the acceleration. You know, I went in, you go into a store, and Darren, when I was a boy, I said this before on another broadcast, I wore my Beetle boots in the 1960s and my bell-bottom pants in the late 60s. But you could always look at me and say, that's a boy, that's a man, that's a young man. Now you got people walking around, they're dressing like a morphidite or like some kind of a androgynous nothing, and you're looking at someone and actually questioning yourself, wondering, not are they a cross-dresser, but are they one or the other or both or something in between? That what has this world come to when you look at a man and you can't, or a woman?
Well, when you have to have a little clarification.
My whole life I've been dressing up like a man.
There you go. Got to have a little clarification sometimes.
So, you know, I know that's taking you down a dark area. But this
us go down a dark area?
All of it goes to back to that very thing, where we're at in time and what we can expect. And as people are continuing to be dumbed down and de-educated and provoked into believing that because someone believes in an existence of a conspiracy to destroy, they're marginalized and ridiculed. And rather than someone even begin to believe that what Nancy or Darren or John is saying could be true, your average person, whether they're in America or Russia or China, will say, what a kook, because they cannot allow themselves to want the truth enough to see the truth and say, oh, my goodness.
Well, John, more and more people are recognizing us as being the truth-sayers and not kooks, or more and more people are joining the realm of kookhood. I mean, you can look at it either way.
I understand. Something.
We're not a minority anymore, my friend. That's what I'm getting at.
Maybe later in the broadcast, I don't know what you got the next couple hours, but I talked to you last week or the week before about Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Maybe bring that to people's attention in relation to the geoengineering.
All right.
That'll blow minds.
Yeah. Well, listen, John, I appreciate the call.
All right, I'll make room.
All right.
Thank you.
Blessings to you. Let's go to the next call here. I think this one's from New Jersey. Hello, New Jersey. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
There was an incredible story out of Danbury, Connecticut this past week. Three men were arrested for sex trafficking of retarded boys. They would take boys somehow that are in the system that they were aware of, and that they would sell them to wealthy men in Connecticut. Absolutely incredible story. The local media, of course, the New York, which we were mainly the New York media, they gave it a 4 or 5 second blurb, and then that was it. But it's an incredible story, and it goes to what you were talking about. The wickedness, the evil nature of these individuals. Now, and they gave more attention. They gave more to a guy who was arrested for stealing a candy bar. They gave that more attention than they did to this this sex trafficking ring. Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, and it kind of goes to show you who controls the media. I think, again, I come back to what I told Sherry last week. I think a lot of this is the media, even the honest people in the media, are reticent to talk about this epidemic because, and I do think it's an epidemic, but I think it's a dirty little secret because people are afraid of saying the wrong thing because this is such an incendiary topic that unless you have proof. Now, in the case of this, I think you said they were arrested. So,
yes.
You know, of course, the person's still innocent until proven guilty. But I think that's one of the things that people are just afraid. They're afraid to talk about it because the backlash can be enormous. But, again, it kind of feeds itself because if you don't talk about it, then it continues to fester beneath the surface, and it's like everybody's just kind of whistling past the graveyard.
Yeah. Well, one member of Idaho Eagle Forum, I think she was in chapter president in Missouri. She and her husband were suicided after she started speaking out about it in her state.
Wow.
She apparently had someone contact her with credible information, and she went public, and she and her husband died. So.
Wow. That's disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah, and the glorified readers on the screen who don't want to lose their million-dollar contract, they're not going to, they're just going to do what they're told anyway.
Yeah.
And just read what they're told to read.
Well, I find more honesty in local media than I do in national media. Now, when you get into the big market levels, those bigger markets, they're one step away from being the big national media, and so there's a lot of incestuousness going on there, no pun intended. But I mean, you got a lot of the anchors who end up on the national scale, their final step before going on a national scale tends to be those big markets. Matter of fact, I come from that realm, the media. That's my professional training, and we in the mid-size and small size markets, you get people fresh out of college. I mean, they're still wet behind the ears, and they put them in front of a camera, you know, and put them producing newscasts and this sort of thing. So every single one of these people are looking to move their way up and get out of these markets as quickly as possible. They get there, get a resume taped together, and go on where they can make money. But it's an incredible revolving door, but it's a big problem when you deal with people in big markets and network levels, and they, like you said, they get their marching orders, and they don't want to rock the boat. Hey, do you have anything else there?
But the people...
Hey,
just one quick thing.
Okay, let me hold you over the break then. I'll hold you over the break. Stay with me.
Sure.
And keep your thoughts in place. Folks, so we got to take the top of the hour break, and we'll be back in a moment. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. Please don't go away. This is Govern America.
Crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America, hour number 2. It continues to be the 1st of April, 2017. And greetings to all the folks in the chat room, and greetings to all the folks listening to us on the satellite via the American Voice Radio Network. Greetings to the folks on UCY.TV listening to us there. Glad to have you along as well. And we're greetings to all the folks listening to us on the various micro stations. The micro FMs are all across the country. Thanks to the owners that carry Govern America. We appreciate what you do reaching people on the ground. We've been talking a little bit about the situation with regard to this silent epidemic and some of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes that really never really quite bubble to the surface very often. And we're talking about the corruption of our politicians, how they can be led around by the nose by the dark secrets that they have in their closet. And we have a gentleman from New Jersey on the line helping us.
Wait,
go ahead.
Darren,
yeah.
Darren, before we move on, I have to correct something.
Okay.
I said the Missouri chapter leader of Idaho Eagle Forum. It wasn't Idaho Eagle Forum. It was Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Idaho Eagle Forum, so I'm just used to saying that. So I just wanted to correct that.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. On the record. All right. So I don't think I caught your name either, caller. What was your...
Yes, Ellen.
Ellen?
Ellis is the name.
Ellis. Okay. Very good.
Ellis.
So you had another thought regarding this?
Yeah, just one thing. When they interviewed the neighbors in the community, they all knew about it because apparently this had been going on for over 20 years. And the neighbors said nothing. They knew that they were dealing with shady characters, but they said nothing about it. And then I'll leave you with this. One thing, last week after your show went off,
mm-hmm.
there was an incredible documentary on that played, it went on for about 2 or 3 hours. And I didn't get the name of it. It was a gentleman with a British accent. Do you have any idea what that documentary was?
Are you talking about on our stream?
Yes.
Okay.
After your show closed, after you closed it too.
Was it the one involved with Madeline? What's her name? The girl that disappeared. I can't remember now. Tell you what, shoot me an email. Yeah, shoot me an email, and I'll see if I can track it down for you. Because we got a number of documentaries, and I'd have to look up the titles.
Okay.
Yeah, the email is radio@governamerica.com. Yeah, if you just... inquire in the email, describe, I'm the guy that called in, and then pose your question again, so I remember, and then I'll see if I can't at least make a few suggestions on what it probably was. All right?
All righty, will do.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for calling. Hope you call back. All right, talk to you later.
Bye. All right, take care.
All right, moving along here, we got another caller on the line. Hello, caller, who do we have here? Ooh, I guess they dropped. Okay, well, call back if you want to get on the air. 844-646-8376. That's 844-6-GOVERN. Hey, Vicki, do you have anything you wanted to say before we move on here?
Nope, that was it. I just needed to make that correction.
That's okay. Well, the German Marshall Fund, you had mentioned that. Did you want to play some audio from that? They held their Brussels Forum 2017. And there was a press conference between Ron Johnson and John McCain. And they were talking about some interesting things. Of course, the Russians.
Yeah, and let me tell people who the German Marshall Fund is.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. Remember after World War II, General George Marshall established what was called the Marshall Plan for mm-hmm. the rebuilding of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And an entire global infrastructure was built for development purposes. And in 1971, I think it was, the German people established a nonprofit organization called the German Marshall Fund to what I consider to be turn the tables on the United States. And I how we talk about these NGOs all the time. Really, all of this civilian warfare on the civilian turf is being waged against people in all the countries by NGOs, and the German Marshall Fund is one of the big ones.
Yeah, their website, by the way, is gmfus.org. And they say they strengthen transatlantic cooperation on regional, national, and global challenges and opportunities in the spirit of the Marshall Plan. They contribute research and analysis and convene leaders on transatlantic issues relevant to policymakers. Blah, 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 blah. So, basically all these groups are shutting out the average, ordinary, the people that their government is supposed to be representing, and this is why we have no voice in our government anymore. But anyway, this conference, John McCain was there with Ron Johnson, and they were talking about a number of things, the Russians being one topic, but they also got into the Iran deal, and then had a startling admission came out.
Thanks, Lawrence Norman of the Wall Street Journal. Do you both believe the Trump administration is reaching the point where it is ready to live with the Iranian nuclear accord?
I'm not sure because we hear different messages from the administration, but I think there is very appropriately a review of Iranian behavior and whether they have been in compliance with that agreement or not. And there are a number of sources out there that show that they have violated that agreement. But I'm not frankly sure where it is on the priority list of the Trump administration.
I'll only add, one of the reasons both of us were completely opposed to that agreement is that we've funneled at least $100 billion, if not more, into the military and the economy of, let's face it, the largest state-sponsored terror in the world. You can't get that money back. So we're all having to live with it, and that's very, very unfortunate. But again, I think what we need to do is make sure that they're not cheating. They probably will be. It's going to be hard for us to understand whether they are or not, which is another bad part of that deal.
Did you catch that? I know you did, Vicki.
Yeah, $100 billion.
You were the one that sent me the clip. Yeah, it was a nice clip. Let's play that last part again.
One of the reasons both of us were completely opposed to that agreement is that we've funneled at least $100 billion, if not more, into the military and the economy of, let's face it, the largest state-sponsored terror in the world.
Yeah, it's what we do. It's how we roll.
Yep. And we've funneled money into countries all over the world. You know, they tell us that our country is bankrupt. We've got this huge deficit. We can't afford the schools anymore. We can't afford health care. We can't afford anything. But yet, these members of Congress are spending that kind of money all over the world building this global infrastructure system. They are paying for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, for one aspect of it or another. Now, the communist Chinese are building part of it, but the United States, the taxpayers of the United States, are building a whole lot of it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people are going hungry, losing their homes, increasingly don't have jobs, and this is the kind of thing that they're wasting money on. You know, these excursions around the world, which will ultimately lead to the collapse of our country, because you can't continue to go on this way. I mean, they're balancing this multiple simultaneous theater war, these theater wars, multiple theaters all across the world, and we're spread very thin. You know, we're being invaded. Yeah, go ahead.
I think they're betting that they can get this global control grid built before the illusion of the American economy falls totally apart.
Mm. Well, they're going to have to hurry because I don't think we're going to have to wait long, unfortunately. Anyway, after they said that, the topic turned to Syria, and McCain is talking about the dismal mess that the U.S. has created over there.
I see abysmal failure. I see 420,000 people dead. I see 6 million refugees. I see a former president of the United States who committed once Bashar Assad crossed the red line, we would take action, and we didn't. I see Russian aircraft with precision weapons striking hospitals. I see a humanitarian disaster of the most monumental consequences, maybe in many respects the largest since the end of World War II. I see an abject failure of American and our allied leadership. That's what I see. And I still believe we could establish a no-fly zone, we could arm the Free Syrian Army, and we could roll back Bashar Assad.
Wasn't the Free Syrian Army, weren't they the ones that were biting the organs of the dead people that they had killed over there? Seems like I remember that.
Who was bailed out by Hezbollah.
Yikes.
Huh?
I said yikes. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, there were pictures of that.
Hold back Bashar Assad, who was bailed out by Hezbollah and Russia. So this is a disaster in every sense of the word. The flood of refugees into Europe has put a strain on the New World Order. And the humanitarian effects of this are just colossal.
So in other words, things are going as planned.
Yeah. Well, you know why they would be shooting at hospitals if they did? Mm-hmm. So that they could rebuild them with the global systems. Yeah, there is a global
health. Yeah, with U.S. taxpayer money.
Yeah. And so, you know, they need to rebuild those hospitals. I saw some images of hospitals in Syria, and they were really quite old buildings, you know, like built in the 1920s or something like that. Uh-huh. And so if you look at this globalization as a rebuilding the globe with rebuilding everything in the world with embedded technology, including hospitals, because hospitals are a key component to this whole global infrastructure, then it would make sense to bomb the hospitals because they're you know, it's demolition.
Yeah.
And it's a way to have the Americans pay to rebuild them.
Exactly. Tell you what, we got a call on the line. I've tried to take it three times now, and so let's try the third time, or twice before they dropped. Hello, caller. Well, there they went again. I don't know what's going on. There was a caller in Las Vegas. I don't know if you're hanging up or if there's a problem with your phone. Every time I go to you, the call drops. So I guess try to call back, and I'll hurry up and take him. We'll see if we can get you on the air. And, folks, you're welcome to call in if you want to, 1-844-646-8376. That's 844-6-GOVERN, 844-646-8376. But this war on terror is a very distressing situation when you consider
it's a war of terror.
It is a war of terror. You're absolutely right. And there's also another thing that people need to keep in mind. There's a website, a publication called CarPro. And CarPro reported on just 10 days, well, 11 days ago, maybe 12, beware the unmarked 18-wheeler. It says, if you do a lot of highway driving, you can't help but see a lot of 18-wheelers. You see the big rigs with brand names splashed all over them, Walmart, Swift, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of different ones they name off. They say the United States Department of Energy has a little-known department called the Office of Secure Transportation, even though the Department of Energy's website doesn't list the OST. So what does this mystery arm of the government do? The mission of the Office of Secure Transportation is to safely transport nuclear bombs, nuclear bomb components, and other nuclear materials like plutonium and uranium across America in the back of unmarked 18-wheelers. Yes, it's true that nondescript big rig you might see running down the road could have a nuclear bomb in the back.
Well, you know what? The building of the whole global transportation system actually started in the United States with the Nunn-Lugar Cooperative Threat Reduction Initiative. And what it was intended to do was to help Russia, the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. dispose of their nuclear weapons. And part of that process was having a system that was a chain of custody system, you know, for moving these things across borders as they're being destroyed. It's not only nuclear, it's chemical and biological. And so I'm not sure who was involved in designing that system, whether it was Lockheed or perhaps Unisys, because it was over in Europe. But that's where the design of the whole global transportation system started as a building project of the United States.
Yeah, and how much of this are the people ever consulted on anything? You know, I mean, it's interesting that all this stuff is just kind of percolating in the background, and we find out about it sometimes years after it happens, sometimes never. I mean, if we had any idea how much our government is involved in, I think it would be mind-boggling. I think it is mind-boggling anytime you
It is
that.
Mind-boggling. And I was looking back in history, you know, because of that Nunn-Lugar legislation, mm-hmm. I was looking back on Thomas, which is Congress's website.
Search engine, yeah.
Yeah, I was looking for legislation, and I found H.R. 3402, which is the support for East European democracy. It was called the SEED Act of 1989. This one was interesting. It was called the Kentucky National Forest Land Transfer Act, but that piece of legislation had nothing to do with Kentucky. It was all about money and appropriations for the Eastern Bloc countries. And then there was the Freedom Support Act, the Senate Bill 2532. But our country has spent billions and billions of dollars over there in the Eastern Bloc country, countries. And they've exported communism over here.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, that has been the outcome of globalization. Is that we really no longer have a capitalist country. We no longer have a free country. We are actually living under a police state right now, but it's just kept kind of low profile.
Yeah, and as time goes by, we get less and less privacy all the time. You know, and this is one of the things. I mean, we got James Comey right now promoting the idea of an international encryption backdoor partnership.
You know, well, they need that for total information awareness.
Totally,
you're
right. Yeah, that's exactly what the goal is.
They have to have the back door into everything.
Yeah, that's exactly what the goal is. And then we have our government now promoting also, you know, this crisis in Yemen where the Saudis are bombing the heck out of people. People are now starving. You know, my understanding of the Yemen crisis, and we haven't talked about it a lot here because so many other things have pressed against us. But, you know, this all started, according to my research, back in 1993 with the parliamentary elections. You had longtime dictator Ali Abdullah Saleh. He won a plurality in the parliament there. Now, from my understanding, Saleh is really a stooge of the West, and by extension, I would say Israel. Anyway, he negotiated a deal with Hussein al-Houthi, the powerful opposition member of the opposition party, the Al-Haq party. I guess is how you pronounce it. I'm not sure. It's Al-Haq.
Al-Haq, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he negotiated a deal with him that he would keep his distance. Well, Houthi kept his end of the bargain, but Saleh used the advantage to squeeze him out politically. And then he left the country for a while. I guess he had a doctorate he was working on, so he returned in 2001 and built an opposition coalition, and he exposed Saleh as a U.S. puppet. Now, the Yemeni military then moved against him and his group, his organization, and he was eventually killed. His father and his brother organized an even bigger opposition coalition against Saleh, leading to the full-scale civil war, and I think that was around 2009. The entire civil war had broke out by that point, but the Houthi movement had taken over much of Yemen, and had you know, putting the squeeze on al-Qaeda terrorists, and that's the problem. We can't have our al-Qaeda terrorists squeezed out. So then the Saudis began bombing the Houthis. In a campaign that's, you know, basically aided and abetted by the United States. I mean, we're refueling their jets in the air. We're providing them weaponry and all kinds of things. And this is really something that doesn't get talked about much in the Western media. We're too busy looking for you know, Russian spies under the rug.
You know, probably also training their military. And that goes to what we were talking about last week, which is the reorientation, the reorganization of governing structures along horizontal lines, meaning across the borders of countries, basically eliminating national militaries, creating global militaries. But who are the global militaries loyal to? They're not loyal to a country because they're global.
Yeah. Well, and they're comprised largely of national militaries. But see, this is the problem. And this is the thing that I have to stress to people. When you allow your sons and daughters to sign up for the military, you think you're serving your country. You think they're going to be serving their country. But where are they going to end up? In a NATO army, in many cases, commanded by a foreign officer. Are you really fighting for your country when you're being commanded by a foreigner? Are you really fighting for your country? The whole thing is based upon a lie. And this notion of false patriotism, this is how everything is done. Oh, don't you want to be patriotic? In the meantime, they're working to destroy your country back home. But you're not there to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's
very painful to see.
Pretty well sums it up.
Very painful to see how betrayed the most dedicated people in our country are, and how many families, how many lives have been wrecked, how many empty seats are at family tables for loved ones that used to be there and are no more. Because their lives have been destroyed, literally. I mean, they've been killed, or they've killed themselves. And many of them, the ones that haven't physically died, are mentally dead. I mean, they'll never be the same again. It's very painful. And another thing that's painful. We've been talking, in fact, you were going through the C-SPAN archives. Going back to the year 1993, you have anything you want to say about that? The NAFTA archives?
Yeah. Sometimes I go back through the C-SPAN archives. Usually, I'm looking for a particular program that I remember that's there, but it never fails. You know, I always see half a dozen programs I want to watch. Just to refresh my memory, and one of them that I found was a really interesting radio program that was being televised, and the guests on that program were Ralph Nader, mm-hmm. a guy named Patrick Choate, who was Ross Perot's advisor during Ross Perot's presidential campaign, and Ross Perot himself. And this was right like a week or two before the vote on NAFTA. And they were talking about the various problems with NAFTA. And it was really interesting.
Well, the clip that I got, they were talking about the in specific how it would really develop or benefit the international banking cartel.
And we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, Ralph Nader is in Washington. Chuck Harder here at the Telford Hotel in White Springs, Florida. Ralph, your microphone is open. I'm holding up for the folks watching on TV, and this is news. This is a new medium for me. So, ladies and gentlemen, those of you on watching on TV, if I'm a little bit clumsy, please bear with me. This is very new. This shows our trade deficit and essentially what has happened to the United States, and how we have lost our economy, and it shows how year after year after year the trade deficit has soared, and how we are losing our standard of living. Ralph, in your own words, what is the big danger of a continuing trade deficit? And our trade deficit now is something like $1.266 trillion since 1980. What is the big danger of a trade deficit this big?
Well, first of all, it's another way of exporting jobs. When you have an international trade deficit, you are exporting jobs. Also, you are importing products that allegedly are supposed to be cheaper for the consumer. And it's interesting, the Washington Post was describing NAFTA a few days ago, and they had impact on the consumer. And they said, very little impact in terms of prices. Well, if free trade is supposed to reduce consumer prices because of the mutual advantage, what's going on? It could be that the importers are not passing along the savings to the consumers who buy the textiles and the home appliances and the electronic VCRs, etc. Secondly, what happens is that increasingly we will be more and more reliant on international finance to finance our debts and our deficits. That relinquishes more of our democratic self-determination here at home.
Okay, so I'm going to leave it there for just a moment, and we'll take the break and we'll continue on the other side. Folks, you're welcome to call in as well, 844-646-8376. That's toll-free, 844-6-GOVERN. 844-646-8376. The chat room is open at chat.governamerica.com. That's chat.governamerica.com. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America. All right. I don't know what happened here. But I'll tell you what. We'll come back a little early this time. Seems like we had a little gap in our automation here. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Govern America. Are you still there, Vicky? Okay, maybe Vicky had to run an errand. But anyway, we're here. I'm going to go ahead and continue with the audio we were playing a moment ago. This was Ralph Nader back in 1993 as we were as he was talking about the threat that NAFTA would pose to the American people. And it's interesting to look at this because in hindsight, we got the benefit of hindsight now. We've got the benefit of history and how this thing has played out now over the years. And so it's quite fascinating to see some of the predictions that were made and see how those predictions have come to fruition.
Into the hands of the big banks and other financial centers in Europe, Japan, and elsewhere. I wanted to reply when you said, how else would I fix NAFTA? Because I don't want people to think there's just one or two ways. The secret tribunals have to be completely replaced with open international tribunals where not just governments can participate, where people can sit in the tribunal room and watch the proceedings, and where there is a review of the tribunal decisions that can affect the health and safety of children in our country, the safety on the highways, what people breathe, workplace safety, that they can have it reviewed in either an open world trade court that's similar to our courts in terms of due process, or in our courts here in the United States. We don't want a level of international autocracy to start eating away at our democracy. People are having enough trouble thinking, how are they going to control their own local government, state, and federal, without being told by both international corporations and these tribunals and the governments that take us to these tribunals that we have to let them make the decision for us. And if we don't weaken our standards, we will be exposed to indefinite penalties under the NAFTA agreement.
Yeah, this is one of the problems that I've seen for a long time. It's the problem that we have with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as these international tribunals. You lose your sovereignty. I think I heard you're back there, Vicky. I think we had a little bit of a problem, I think, with a corrupt file, so I ended up coming back a little early there from the break. But
did you get to the part in that clip where he said that there was a George Herbert Walker Bush created an Inter-American Development Bank, and one of the investors in that development bank was the treasurer of Mexico. And they were getting ready to buy up businesses that were going to go out of businesses because of the competition, because of the difference in labor prices between Mexico and the United States. I mean, that's the ultimate insider deal.
Yeah.
You know, and George, under an initiative called the Enterprise of the Americas, and you can do a search on that and find it.
Mm-hmm.
one of the initiatives was this Inter-American Development Bank, and they probably all made a lot of money just by knowing that a lot of American businesses were going to go out of business just because of the open border with Mexico and the price differential in labor.
Yeah, I think they have these studies that they do ahead of time before they enact their policies to find out what the impacts are going to be, and they're there to position themselves. And nobody ever calls them on this. This is the very definition, really, of insider trading, if it were done on the stock market. But these people are in a position to cash in, and certainly that's what they do every time. Now, I do have one more clip. It's probably not that what you just spoke about, but Nader went on to talk about, I thought it was kind of interesting, the pork barrel spending he was talking about. You know, because, again, this kind of thing is going to come down the pipe again. As a matter of fact, some of the NAFTA changes that Trump is proposing are a little bit unsettling, shall we say. But first, we'll go back to Nader.
Most of the, all these former presidents and economists and executives who lined up with Clinton and Newt Gingrich and the Republicans, they've never read these two volumes. They don't care to read it. They see this label free trade and they knee-jerk, or they see that Exxon, General Motors, DuPont are for it, and they say, well, big business is for it, you know, the Republicans will go with it. And Clinton, who's become, I'm afraid, a crypto Republican, also has fallen into the hands of these mega multinational corporations. The reporting has been quite biased and quite non-investigative, and that's true for the New York Times, Washington Post, as well as other papers. They're not looking at the details of the agreement. They're trying to paint it like it's free trade versus protectionist. Well, first of all, there are great benefits to free trade, but not between modest democracies and dictatorships who can take the democracies to these secret international tribunals and hammer them on their living standards back home. Just look at the speed with which Clinton is moving. Shall we say undue haste? He sent this up to Congress on November 5th, including the implementing legislation for NAFTA. There is no way in 10 days citizen groups and interested citizens all over the United States will have a chance to look at what is in here. For example, there are special goodies in here for certain corporations. You know, a lot of the networks recently have been extraordinarily one-sided. NBC, ABC, CBS. They keep saying that the opponents of NAFTA are Ross Perot primarily, or Ross Perot and organized labor. Well, there are hundreds of church groups, environmental groups, consumer groups, citizen groups, civil rights groups, from the NAACP to the ACLU, grassroots conservation groups, conservative groups, who are against NAFTA. The NAFTA vote buying to cost taxpayer billions. A partial accounting of the federal pork traded for NAFTA votes by Mr. Clinton, I might add. Here are some of the things they're trading off with different members of the House of Representatives. Oh, we'll build a few military cargo planes if we get your yes vote, a member of Congress from Texas was told. Did J.J. Pickle Center, University of Austin, Texas, for Congressman Pickle, and a $10 million international center for international trade, a grazing fee back down for the mountain states representatives, an East Houston bridge, a tobacco tax scale back. Imagine fooling with people's health on that. A $400 million North American Development Bank, which Clinton doesn't know how to fund, to get Esteban Torres' vote in Southern California. Airline routes, Maytag, Florida vegetable deal, citrus, sugar, presidential letter on labor rights, etc. It's pork barrel time in Washington. And remember, this is going to cost taxpayers billions of dollars. The Joint Economic Committee in Congress, very respected nonpartisan committee, reported that NAFTA will cost Americans 500,000 jobs, debunked those 22 studies that Gore mentioned the other night, and that there will be at least $20 billion of cost. Well, that means Clinton's going to have to raise taxes. He doesn't want to admit it because he doesn't want to alienate the Republican backers on NAFTA in the House. But those of you who are worried about health and safety, worried about jobs, worried about taxes, worried about losing our democratic rights to international autocratic tribunals, should be worried enough to call your member of the House of Representatives Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday when the vote is.
Okay, so that's what I have in that. You know, and I think it's fascinating to see even some of the worst predictions, You know, it's lived up to the worst predictions that there are, that there were back then.
Yeah, their worst predictions actually didn't even really begin to cover.
Scratch the surface.
At one point, not so long ago, I heard somebody say that that Mexico really did not achieve the benefits that they should have.
No, that's
which
true.
Which is not a surprise because they the manufacturers went down there to manufacture for export. So all they got out of the deal were just those crummy jobs where they weren't paying the people enough money to live decently.
Yeah, the Mexicans are second victims.
Yeah.
And in some respects, we can't blame them for trying to come north because they were pushed off their land by the multinational corporations that went down below the border. You know, our U.S. corporations went down there and start populating all these areas where the Mexicans lived, and they were run off their own property.
Right, the farmers that grew corn and the fishermen who did fishing for a living, they were put out of business. But then, you know, once the deal with China was made, all of those manufacturing jobs went to China.
Yep.
So the whole thing, it's like a global Ponzi scheme, and it includes labor arbitrage. You know, how low can you go in wages?
Yeah, it really is a worldwide slave state.
Yes.
Everyone is a global slave. I mean, it really is. I hate to put it that way, but that's... And then now we see... Now, Trump supposedly is going to fix all this. But Politico had an article out. Trump's NAFTA changes aren't much different from Obama's. They say President Donald Trump... Go ahead. You going to say something?
I'm sure they're not... I just read an article that Kushner, you know, Trump's son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be working with Jamie Gorelick. Jamie Gorelick, you know, the attorney who worked for the Attorney General's office during 9/11. She was on the 9/11 commission, and she's the one that wrote that famous MOU about the Chinese wall of separation between the CIA and the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I looked back at my, after I read that article about that she's still there, I wrote about her quite a long time ago. In 1995, she was the deputy attorney general that was part of the critical infrastructure working group. So she has been involved in the legal aspects of this whole technocratic infrastructure system, police state surveillance system that's been implemented in our country for the last two decades.
Yeah, the more I learn about Ivanka Trump, the less I like of her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's also, you know, and I know you're talking about Jamie Gorelick, but this woman you're talking about, this Jamie Gorelick, is an advisor to Ivanka Trump.
And she's also involved with Kushner, which is Ivanka Trump's husband.
Right, exactly.
Right.
But Ivanka is pushing her dad to stay in the Paris Agreement. Is my understanding.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, all that climate change stuff is really about the global market for technology for control of resources. And for police state surveillance, it's all about developing the technology for the technocratic control grid.
It is. Totally, and it's about cashing in, and it's about controlling everything you do. Because if they're able to tax the building blocks of life, if they're able to tax the elements, if they're able to tax the air, they're literally able to control everything you do. I mean, there's nothing you can do without emitting CO2 into the atmosphere. And as far as global warming, I mean, give me a break. We've had climatologists on this show talking about how the biggest greenhouse gas is water vapor. And they never talk about water vapor. because what are you going to do about water vapor? But that's this is the thing that really traps heat is water vapor, much more than CO2. So it's all junk science, but it's not designed to be, you know. And then you if you're against it, you're a denier.
To which I say, yes, I am. As a matter of fact,
guilty as charged. Exactly. Well, Robert Draper is a journalist. He was on MSNBC, and he was asked about Trump's plans to cut spending. I thought this was pretty important because we're talking about this club here where Trump is supposed to be this freedom-loving guy, and yet it's like new guard meet old guard meet new guard, same as old guard. You know, I mean, it's the same type of deal. Anyway, this Robert Draper... he's talking about, he was on MSNBC and, you know, of course, a liberal network. They love tax and spend. But he made his assessment of Trump's position, which I found was all the more interesting.
Quick question here on spending reform. You talked about tax reform and there being an agreement in theory among Republicans about at least cutting taxes. How to do that, of course, is much more complicated. But how to reform spending seems to be another huge sticking point here. And I wonder where Trump's head is on doing what Paul Ryan really wants to do, which is reform the entitlement system.
Yeah, let me put this plainly, Jeremy. He doesn't want to do entitlement reform. And
really?
I talked to the members of the Freedom Caucus over and over, and they all were saying, oh, he's going to come to Jesus on this. He's going to realize that, you know, just dealing with the discretionary, non-military part of the budget isn't going to cut the mustard, isn't going to get us to a balanced budget. They may well be right about that, but President Trump is firm about this. And I had asked him plainly, I said, these guys who want entitlement reform probably should not hold their breath, right? And he said, I do think you're right. And he essentially gave that message, Jeremy, throughout the campaign trail. I mean, that should not be surprising to us. So, if anything, President Trump went on saying that he believed that we needed to, quote unquote, prime the pump, which he explained to me meant spend more money to make more money. So more than anything else, he's sounding like a Keynesian liberal.
What do you think of that?
Well, the problem is where they want to spend the money. It does not filter through the economy. It doesn't. They talk about building infrastructure, you know, like roads and stuff, as if it were the 1950s. When they first built the interstate highway system, yeah, it did increase the economy incredibly. Because I remember driving from when I was a kid, we would always go vacation in Idaho. And all the way from California, you know, once you got outside of Sacramento, it was like a two-lane highway all the way over Donner Summit and then across the desert to Idaho. Mm-hmm. So when they built the interstate highway system and you could just drive and it was so much easier and faster, it was an economic boon to this country. But the roads are already built. They're just rebuilding them, that's all. And you don't get the same kind of boom in the economy from rebuilding something that's already there.
Well, I think what a lot of this money, and of course we talked about the $1 trillion that he's asking Congress for infrastructure, but I think a lot of this money is going to go to rebuild the highway systems to make them smart.
It's for the technology.
Mm-hmm. To facilitate the tracking and the self-driving and autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, but there's no payback to the taxpayers for building that kind of infrastructure. There is no benefit. You know, every IT project I ever worked on, there was a cost-benefit analysis. Mm-hmm. And there always had to be a benefit that was greater than the cost in order to do it. Well, with this whole technocratic infrastructure, it has been all cost and hardly any benefit to the majority of the people.
Right.
There has been tremendous benefit to a very, very few.
Right. Yeah, and this Jamie Gorelick you had mentioned, she's a hardcore Clinton fan. So how does it make you folks feel when we have a hardcore Clinton fan advising the Trumps on how to do public policy? Is this
and she was involved in critical infrastructure, which leads to the fusion centers, which is total information awareness.
And Trump admitted, you know what, that's one thing. He didn't lie about that. He admitted he's a security guy. I mean, people, you can't say he misled you on that. He says, the first thing I do is err on the side of security.
Well, he was, you know what this whole technocratic, global technocratic system did? They inverted what security was. Now, when I was growing up, when I was young, we had security at our borders. Mm-hmm. They, when you flew international flights, there were only a couple of airports that you could fly into. They were very careful about visas. The security was at the perimeter of our country. Well, with this globalization, they have eliminated perimeter security, and they're trying to embed security into everything in the interior. But that's how you're creating. That's how they're creating the ultimate police state.
Yep. Yeah, and then, you know, we're talking about Trump doing things that people expected him not to do. Here's another thing. I mean, trying to have ending entitlements is one thing, or not ending entitlements are one thing. Granted, entitlements are very difficult to end without a lot of political backlash. And this is part of the reason, probably a lot of the reason, why they're never ended. But then Turn around and to start new entitlements, which is what this sounds like to me.
My administration will work every day to ensure that our economy is a place where women can work, succeed, and thrive like never before. That includes fighting to make sure that all mothers and all families have access to affordable child care.
And how is he going to do that? Sounds like another government program that people are going to scream about once they're dependent upon it.
They plan on having the schools basically take over raising children, so that preschool. Only it used to be that preschool was private and it started at 4 years old, but now they're wanting to embed that in the schools, so the schools take over not only educating children but also their health care. Everything about the children as a replacement for parents.
Yeah. So let the state raise your kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember back when I worked at the NBC affiliate here back in the 90s, we used to run, I worked overnight in master control, and we used to run these public service announcements for community schools. And I remember I knew a fraction of what I know today. But even back then, when I was first just waking up, I realized this was something that, I mean, it's communism. There's no other way. There's no other way to describe it. I guess now today we would call it communitarianism. But regardless, putting the state in control of your children, the thing would open up with a principal walking down the hallway. A man, an elderly man, and he's looking inside the classrooms, and he's talking, and there's a voiceover that says, you know, we've got all these different programs at our schools. You know, we've got programs for music, and we got athletics, and we've got, Spanish-speaking, he didn't say Spanish, but for different activities anyway, he named off, and he says, it's all fun, they're all enjoying it. And he says, the only problem is we can't seem to get them to want to go home. And it flashed, as he said that, it flashed to an outside shot of the school at nighttime with the lights on at inside the school building.
Right, and, sure, because some parents work at night.
Yeah, well, and my thought at the time is, oh, well, I guess the next step is just to have them stay the night. You know, just like they do in communist Cuba. It's incredible. Anyway, we got a call on the line. Let me go ahead and take the call before they drop. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Darren, this is Alan down here in Texas.
Hey, Alan. Good to hear from you.
Yep. I haven't given up. Listen, I'm not mad at you or anything. Steve said he talked to you, and you thought I might be mad at you or something. No, I like I said, most of the time, Darren, I listen to y'all, and I learn. You know, if I don't have something to inject into a situation, I won't call just to hear myself talk.
Well, that's okay.
Don't ever think that. You're kind of one of my heroes here. You and Vicky both.
Oh, I'm no hero.
You are very well-versed.
You're very kind.
Well, I know I hate to use that term, but, you know, I do look up to y'all, and I look to y'all for information all the time.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm glad to know you're still hanging in there. And, I won't get into what we discussed last, you know, but it was, you know, I always wonder when I quit hearing from people, you know, what happened. But anyway.
Well, you still got John from Tennessee and all the people that I like to listen to that are intelligent and have done their own research, you know, that call in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to listen to them. You know, they call into our show periodically, which, you know, I'm happy that they do that we're important enough, you know, that they interject something into us.
Yeah.
But you're talking about something here, I try to keep, you know, up on the local stuff going on here. And one thing that really just bugs me, and you're talking about it now, is, you know, the school system and everything. And in the paper here, there was an article about what children need as far as immunizations to sign up for kindergarten at one of the local little schools out here in the country. And they have to have a minimum of 21 vaccinations, a maximum of 25, to even get into school at the age of 5 for kindergarten. Now, I'm 55 years old, Darren, and I might have had 25 needles stuck into me with going to the dentist's office and things like that in my lifetime.
Right.
You know, I've got a background in developmental, you know, embryology, developmental biology.
And, I didn't know that.
I understand what this stuff now is doing to us. You know, I've done some of my own research and read some of the studies that aren't, you know, popularized on the national news and everywhere else. And I do have a niece who is autistic, and her mother happens to be a doctor, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And before I could even get the question out, you know, was she a nice baby, you know, happy, bubbly baby, you know, before I could even get the question out, she says, it was the MMR vaccine at 12 months. It was the MMR vaccine. I watched it happen. You know, and how do you fight that? You know, you try to tell that to people, and it's not my opinion. This is one of the people who wear the white coats that we all look up to,
right,
that says that her own child was damaged by the MMR vaccine at 12 months, became autistic. She was a perfect baby until then.
Well, there's been...
And this stuff just drives me up a wall.
Well, the only thing I can say is education. I mean, that's the only way we can fight it. You know, and in fact, I'm trying to compile a number of stories like this, because the internet is full of stories where people have had their children vaccinated, and moments later, you know, or hours later, the child died. And it's happening more and more all the time. You're right. They've increased the vaccine schedule to where you have to have all these shots before you go to school. And, you know, here's the thing. One of the arguments they use to push this is, well, we can't just have herd mentality. Herd mentality doesn't work. Because when enough people quit getting vaccinated, or herd immunity, I guess is what I should have said. Because the idea of herd immunity is everybody around you is vaccinated, so you're immune because everybody else has been vaccinated. The problem with that is that they're flooding our country with third worlders and people who have all these other diseases. I think that's the reason why we're seeing a lot of the diseases that we've eliminated here come back. You know, it's so if they're really that worried about diseases and eradicating things, why are they flooding our country with foreigners? That's the problem. Hey, Alan, can
I
you
think it's a business decision?
Yeah.
This whole thing about the vaccines, it really tears me up. I can't.
They're attacking the most vulnerable people in our society, the children. You know, we're supposed to be, we're doing it all for the children. You know, think of the children. And then they're attacking the children. Hey, Alan, can you hang on just a second? I got the top of the hour break here. Hold on, we'll get back to you, and we got another caller on the line. Hang with us, caller. Folks, this is Govern America. Hour number 3 is straight ahead. Please, don't go away.
Of our nation.
documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the New World Order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5, this is hour number 3 of Govern America and continues to be the 1st of April 2017. April Fool's Day, ladies and gentlemen. And we're moving rapidly through the show. The phone number, if you'd like to call in, is 1-844-646-8376. That's 844-6-GOVERN. And the website is governamerica.com. And Vicky's website is thetechnocratictyranny.com. And we get back to the phone lines. We have Alan right now in Texas. And Alan, go ahead. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add before I had to rudely interrupt you?
Well, yeah, I'm actually just thinking it's April Fool's Day, and what a nation of fools they have created around everything.
Oh, boy.
We're all in this because for some reason, Darren, we've got some kind of compassion for our fellow humans. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have children myself, you know, but I look around and I see what's going on around me, and it just infuriates me that all these people that you know, even if all these people, you know, that, well, my child had the vaccines and nothing happened to them, and it's like, well, you try to explain to them that everyone's physiology is different, it doesn't affect everyone the same way, you know, but later on in life this could come down, you know, this could harm them later in life, you know, because it's not immediate, they don't see it, you know, we're such a society now to where if everything's not immediate, you know, this instant gratification or instant, you know, whatever, it's nothing, you know, there's no truth to it, to what we're trying to present to people.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't have a whole lot of friends around, and you know, you might not either, because I've immersed myself so much in this world now of trying to find the truth. Since I figured out that I've wasted so much time of my life was wasted being taught lies, that it just infuriates me to this day still. You know, I find out more and more and more, and you know it's the truth because this is all stuff that you know will be poo-pooed by the mainstream media and everything else because they have their own agenda. You know, we know that, but we're trying to wake everyone else up to this fact. You know, I try to bring, you know, the local into our program, you know, and talk about, you know, what I see going on around me and get people to realize that it's going on around you, too. If this little hamlet that I live in, that you know, my parents helped found when they came over from Germany, or my relatives helped found when they came over from Germany, you know, is not the same thing that they all lived in, that they wanted, and they, you know, what they strived to get away from,
mm-hmm.
you know, is what it's turning into here. And it's just trying to get people to realize that this is going on around you. It's not just all this national stuff that, you know, won't ever touch you. It is. You know, when the Department of Homeland Security has to, you know, okay a bake sale on the Mark Plots here in Fredericksburg,
yeah.
you know, something is vastly wrong.
Yeah. That's right. You don't live in a free country. And that's the thing, is they've kept telling us we live in a free country all this time. And in the meantime, they keep encroaching more and more upon the rights of the people. And we're going to be the country with the name freedom, and it's just like Orwell. It's all Orwell. I mean, man, that guy nailed it. Freedom is slavery, yeah. Ignorance is strength, war is peace. I mean, we got a peacekeeping organization that wages peace everywhere it goes, and the world has never been more in turmoil, I don't think.
You know, I
agree with you.
Yeah, you know, periodically I come in contact with, you know, and everyone has this happen to them. They just don't realize it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of my cousins, you know, he's going to law school, and he, you know, she married, you know, into the right family. So, you know, and their son, you know, is going to law school now, and he had some of his buddies out here to the ranch. And we're sitting around a campfire out there and getting to talking. You know, one of them did an internship for a senator in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's up and coming, and, you know, he's, you know, in the right, forming the right family, you know, and meeting the right people and everything. And I, you know, of course, I start talking to him, you know, and it's kind of interesting when he comes back and he says, you know, we get off together one time and he goes, hey, I wanted to ask you about 9/11, you know, and I said, well, what do you want to know about it? And, you know, I gave him some information, and the next time I saw him, he comes back and he goes, well, what about Building 7? And I said, yeah, what about Building 7? You know, so he's looking into it. I help wake someone up a little bit about the what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's all any of us can try to do, you know, get them to realize. And then we're sitting around talking a little bit more, and he comes out and he goes, you wouldn't believe how much homosexuality there is in Washington D.C. And I looked at him and I said, And I just said, you know, you would not believe how much pedophilia there is involved along with that homosexuality, you know, and it's just, you know, these little gems just drop into you and you try.
Yeah, 9/11 is really a good springboard issue for a lot of people. I know a lot of people entered the Patriot realm because of that particular issue. So that's a good one to use to wake people up. I know when I first started researching it, it blew me away because, I mean, it's so easy and so plain, so easy to prove that the official story is false. And beyond that, we can debate what really happened and who's really responsible. But it's very obvious if you just look at the paperwork. So
for me, knowing that the official story was false. And that buildings don't fall down like that, that was enough for me to just continue researching to try and figure out why it was done.
Yeah. So anyway.
But some people, don't.
Yeah. What'd you say, Alan?
I admire both of y'all for what y'all are doing. I love it. You know, like I said, y'all are so well-versed. Like I said, Darren, most of the time I'd love to call in, but most of the time I hate to interrupt y'all's train of thought.
Well, and that's, you know what, I don't have a problem with you guys, you know, people calling in and interrupting. I don't look at it as an interruption. I look at it as a contribution. And so I appreciate what you're doing there, too, and your show as well. You've got a show on RBN there with Steve O'Brien, and so what is that, Saturday nights?
No, it's Sunday morning from 8 to 10 Central time.
Yeah, I usually catch it on the archives.
We've got a doctor on there who doesn't go the normal route. You know, he's gone into naturopathy, you know, and he's actually helping people, you know, trying to get rid of the, you know, trying to solve the problem that's causing their illness instead of just masking it.
Yeah.
You know, so he's not real popular in the community, but he has his own show on AVRN also, you know, Doc Krupa, Dr. David Krupa.
Okay.
And he actually, you know, people call in, and he's actually helped people. You know, they're appreciative, you know, that he actually helped get rid of what was causing their illness instead of just masking it. You know, and that's what we need to get back to, unfortunately. I could have gone to med school, and people ask me why I didn't. I said, because the people that I was in school with, going through these classes with, I did not care to be around. You know, they were in it looking for the financial advancement instead of anything to try to help people.
Exactly.
And same thing with research. You know, I saw what my professors were having to do for as far as research grants, and I'm sorry, I just couldn't kiss that much ass.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't the truth.
Yep. There you go.
So I'm digging ditches, doing construction. You know, with my, like I said, I'm an overeducated redneck. You know,
God bless you.
I'll let y'all get back to the show. Like I said, I appreciate it. I listen to you every Saturday. So y'all just keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Blessings to you. Thanks a lot. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
All right. And there he is. Let's go ahead and go to the next call. I think this is also from Texas. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Hi, Darren. Hi, Vicki. This is Lark.
Hey, Lark.
Hi, Lark.
Good morning. Well, I just wanted to insert just a few little things in here. First of all, regarding Trump's remarks that you played back, that word thrive, along with that word flourish, are both present-day communitarian buzzwords.
Well, you mean you don't want a thriving community?
Yeah, that goes back to that documentary that was funded and produced by the trust fund baby.
Yeah, Gamble?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, of Procter & Gamble. Trust fund baby. And the other thing, too, is I think it's a mistake to... I'm sorry.
Oh, you got your own bumper music that you brought to the show.
I did. We have to remember, when we talk about the law, what do we mean by the law? And in light of the 1946 essay, Politics in the English Language by George Orwell, we see that the English language is quite malleable. And when we talk about the law, we're usually talking about custom and usage. And we can see that because the language itself is so malleable, I mean, witness this word liberal or classic liberal and how it changed in its terms with definitions and meanings, to the, to the extent that today words like conservative and liberal really have no meaning that's intelligible within, say, any group of 10 people. And regarding custom and usage, when we talk about law, it's usually undergirded by something called ethics and morality. And so there is a gentleman by the name of John Rawls, who's deceased, who wrote a book in 1971. He was an Ivy League professor. And it was called Theory of Justice. Theory of Justice by John Rawls, R-A-W-L-S. And see, this book began in earnest the modern-day discussion of what type of a justice or ethics and morality should undergird, quote-unquote, the law. And so I think it'd be well worth your listeners to check this out. There's quite a bit of a debate that's occurred since the early 70s about how the law could be wielded to justify the technocrats' actions. But remember, it's the technocrats who are really just the machinist. They're wielding the tool, and they're being paid, you see. And so we have to actually look into the thought processes of the people who wield this most significant amount of power. And with that, we can go back to really the 16th century, for instance, you know, and we could talk about the Rosicrucian, Martin Luther, and we can talk about Sabbatai Zevi, 1666, who converted from Talmudic Judaism to Islam. And then his another person took cues from Sabbatai Zevi, and that was Jacob Frank, F-R-A-N-K, or Yakov Frank, nearly 100 years later. And so I think it's a mistake when we talk about the Hegelian dialectic and how it's wielded against us as a populace to say that what we have today is a system of communism. We truly have a blending of communism and capitalism.
Right.
And that can be ferreted out pretty simply by just simply doing a search on the internet for father of scientific management.
Yeah, and I'm not trying. And I'm not trying to argue against you here because I agree with you. But at the end of the day, regardless of what you call it, the end result is the same. The people have no rights, and we have masters lording over us. Whether it's the corporations, whether it's the in a corporatist fascist system, it's the corporations. But under the communist system, it's the state, and the state controls the corporations. And today we have both.
Right, they're partners against us.
They're partners against us. Exactly right. And so, but either way, I mean, regardless of, you know, it's like, which poison are you going to drink? It's all, at the end of the day, it's all the same. I mean, the people have no rights.
Yeah, but well, it is an interesting thing that ideas, political ideas, that are marketed to us in the same way that products are marketed to us, but underneath the marketing of these political ideas and ideologies, there's a business reason or a, quote, security reason, which means, you know, the technocratic control grid. There is almost nothing said in our political sphere that is honest and straight up.
That's exactly right.
It is what it is.
Yep.
You might... y'all might want to consider looking at InvisibleSurfsCaller.com, Robin Eubank's blog. Remember, she wrote the book called Credential to Destroy, How and Why Education Became a Weapon. And the particular article that I'm referencing here is entitled Subjugating the Subjective Factor Via Public Policy Cloaking Opravlinii. Another useful term, and I'll spell that word, because if you go to InvisibleSurfsCaller, surf, plural, like like an indentured servant and mm-hmm. collar, like on a shirt or a dress, invisible serfs collar. The word is spelled U as in United, P as in Paul, R-A, V as in Victor, Uprav, L-E-N as in Nancy, I-Y-E, Leniyi. And you do a site search for that word, Uprav, Leniyi. And then also do a site search for those words, another Russian word, Obushchini, O-B-U, O-B as in boy, U-C-H-E-N-I-E, and then two French words, engrenage, which means gearing, E-N-G-R-E-N-A-G-E, and then this word, dirigiste, or dirigisme, which is spelled D-I-R-I. G-I-S-T-E or M-E, which is basically what you've been talking about as a command and control economy, mm-hmm. total information awareness. And we can see how really the younger people today are being subjected to incredible amount of social engineering and conditioning to an acculturation to this communitarian scheme of governance.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember back 10 years ago looking at the mission statements of four small colleges that most people have never heard of, where they were talking about as their mission for the staff and for the institution and for the students is to crank out change agents and global citizens. And then finally, I just want to say that let's not forget it was the uber-rich capitalist of America and Britain that spawned communism. But communism itself, frankly, goes back to the time of the, at least the time of the French Revolution.
Yeah.
They called it republicanism. Mm. And that's why I say we've got to be careful about the terms that we employ, because we have a meme war.
Yeah.
Afoot.
Yep. And that's the first definition of psychological warfare, is to confuse the meaning of words, isn't it?
I think so.
The first paragraph of this article I recommended for you and the listeners references the book by Jean-François Revel entitled "The Flight from Truth." But that's what we see happening today. You know,
yes.
It starts with the words we employ, and if we remember in the 50s. The communists in this country recognized the need to rebrand communism, and just as they felt the need to rebrand capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And so what neater type of a trick to pull off than to call one a thesis, the other its antithesis, and then produce a synthesis.
Yep. There you go.
So anyway, always enjoy your show.
Hey, always enjoy your call. Thank you. Thank you, Lark. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There he is, Larkin, Texas, ladies and gentlemen. And there's still some time to call in if you want to. 1-844-646-8376. That's 844-6-GOVERN. Vicki, did you have anything that you wanted to discuss? I don't want to squeeze you out if you have anything you brought to the table that you want to get out there.
No, I think I sent you everything that I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what it was that I sent you, because I sent you so much stuff.
Yeah, I'd have to get to my email here, but tell you what, there is one thing I wanted to discuss about the one good thing that Trump did do was his executive order reversing Obama's war on coal. This is something that I think is arguably good for the coal miners, and here's a report.
My administration is putting...
Actually, this is Obama, or I'm sorry, Trump.
My administration is putting an end to the war on coal.
President Trump taking major steps to strip down Obama-era regulations to combat climate change.
I am taking historic steps to lift the restrictions on American energy, to reverse government intrusion, and to cancel job-killing regulations.
Signing an executive order at the Environmental Protection Agency that undoes the Clean Power Plan. The initiative to curb carbon emissions at coal-fired power plants. But that 2015 effort by the Obama administration has been tangled up in legal challenges and hasn't even gone into full effect yet. President Trump's order also allows for new coal mines on federal lands by lifting the three-year moratorium and rescinds at least six Obama executive orders aimed at curbing climate change and regulating carbon emissions, including one that says climate change poses a growing threat to national security and another instructing the federal government to prepare for the impact of climate change.
The actions that President Trump has taken today represent the largest attack on climate action in our country's history.
And still TBD in all of this, the Paris Climate Change Accord, which this doesn't touch. But these new changes will make it harder to meet the benchmarks of the agreement.
We're going to bring the coal industry back, folks.
The White House touting this is a campaign promise kept with the goal of job creation. A move that the White House claimed.
Right, and they go on to question whether or not it's going to really save that many jobs, because evidently a lot of the coal industry has been automated now, and you got the same problem there as you have with many other things, you know, computers and robots taking things over. But the point is that I especially wanted to zero in and, you know, missing from the commentary, as we alluded to in that report alluded to, surrounding Trump's executive order on energy, is any mentioning of getting the United States out of the Paris Accord. Is he going limp on this, you know, reversing the climate change agenda? I mean, how serious is he?
The president has said that he plans to roll back his predecessor's clean power plan, but he hasn't said anything or committed anything when it comes to the U.S.'s role in the Paris Climate Agreement, has he?
No, you know, we were hoping to hear some remarks on that today. He didn't address the Paris Accord at all. Maybe that's because there is some discord within the administration about the best approach there. You have Secretary of State Rex Tillerson advocating that the U.S. keep its seat at the table. You have apparently his daughter pushing to stay in the accord. There's some tension because conservatives are pressing the White House to withdraw.
This is a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem. He said that he was going to go through all of those trade agreements, and that it's the trade agreements where they implement all of the rules, and what they've been doing is building this international system of law. And so what we need to do is to just get out of all of those agreements. He should be doing a, what would you call it, a gexit? Exit globalization.
I like it. Gexit. Hey.
And that means, yeah.
We have our show title for today.
Giving notice to get out of all of those agreements, going clear back to 1979 when they started that fast track thing. And one for sure that he should get out of is the La Paz Treaty. The La Paz Treaty and the Montreal Treaty on ozone.
U.S.-Mexican border region. That's
yes.
The La Paz.
All of the treaties that have been stitching us together with Canada and Mexico mm-hmm. into a common market.
Yep. There you go. Senator Ed Markey, chairman of the Environment Public Works Committee, total scumbag. He reacted to this executive order.
This is not an executive order. This is a declaration of war against wind, against solar, against all renewables, against a clean energy technology revolution. And it's also a denial of the science of climate change. And so the best way for us to create jobs would be, as your last analyst just said, is to move on to this new era. We have hundreds of thousands of jobs in wind and solar. We only have 50 to 60,000 jobs left in the coal industry. And that revolution is just going to continue.
What do you think of that, Vicky?
Do you have that clip of, I think the guy's name is Tim Ball, where he on the
yeah he's been a guest many times on the show, Dr.
Right
Tim
on
Ball.
The James Corbett program. He explained how they set up the rules for how they talk about climate change.
He talked about that here too. As a matter of fact, it's called the terms of
Terms of reference.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Any scope, and this is why a lot of times why scientific, you know, scientific panels, but also congressional hearings, investigations, are all limited in scope. It's the terms of reference. The terms of reference are defined before the panel, you know, is given their marching orders. They're basically told what to do and what, you know, the boundaries. They're given their boundaries and the box that they're supposed to stay in. And later on, you can say, well, why didn't you talk about this? Why didn't you look at that? You know, you ignored a lot of the evidence. Well, it wasn't in our terms of reference.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was talking about a little while ago with the congressional hearings. You know, they have a limited scope of what they're going to talk about. And so if you could have the best witness in the world that corresponds to, you know, just that would blow the whole thing open about what they're talking about, but if it's not within their narrow scope, they won't include it.
Yep. And this is why, you know, the JFK investigation, so many things turn out to be a whitewash when you realize that the people investigating them are there's a defined terms of reference going into the whole thing where they're given exactly what they're supposed to look at, and if it's not within that scope, then they're not to look at it.
Right.
The whole thing,
which makes any investigation that they do a complete fraud.
Absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, Al Gore, speaking of a complete fraud, he was recently at an event where he was promoting his new global warming propaganda movie, An Inconvenient Sequel. You got to hand it to this guy. He's got a vivid imagination.
I was just in the Persian Gulf region. And the scientists, for the last couple of years, one of the lines of investigation they've been pursuing has led them to the conclusion that significant areas of the Middle East and North Africa are in danger of becoming uninhabitable. And just a taste of this, to link it to some of the events that the UK and the European Union are going through, and I know that's another source of stress because we're now on the eve next week of the Brexit process. But think for a moment about what happened in Syria. You know, we look at the gates of hell opening. They've long since opened, but before the gates of hell opened in Syria, what?
Okay, now listen closely.
The United Kingdom.
Whoops. Sorry about that, folks. Let me.
Happened. A climate related extreme drought. And the scientists have published these peer reviewed studies for several years now showing exactly why it's related to the climate crisis. From 2006 to 2010, 60% of the farms in Syria were destroyed and had to be abandoned. 80% of the livestock were killed. The drought in the eastern Mediterranean is the worst ever recorded. The records only go back 900 years, but it's historic. And 1.5 million climate refugees were driven into the cities of Syria, where they collided with another 1.5 million refugees from the Iraq War. And WikiLeaks revealed the internal conversations in the Syrian government where they were saying to one another, we can't handle this. There's going to be a social explosion. So there are other causes of the civil war there.
Oh, but really?
This was the principal one.
The principal one.
And those in the region recognized that. And it has unleashed, with other factors, this incredible flow of refugees into Europe, which is creating political instability in Europe, and which contributed in some ways to the desire of some in the UK to say, well, we're not sure we want to be a part of that anymore. And you can go through the list of countries around the world where stability and political and the success of governance is really challenged. Some countries have a hard time even in the best of seasons, but the additional stress that this climate crisis is causing really poses the threat of some political disruption and chaos of a kind the world would find it extremely difficult to deal with.
So climate change, global warming caused the Syrian civil war, which led to the refugee crisis, and ultimately the Brexit. All this caused by global warming, Vicky.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
It's like global warming. It's just like the Russians, you know, are responsible for everything, and global warming is responsible for everything. Of course, you know, geoengineering wouldn't have anything to do with their weather.
You're a crackpot conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. And
you and your tinfoil hat.
I know. I have several of them, so I can be very stylish.
Well, that's right. You gotta decorate, you know. Anyway, accessorize. Speaking of the Brexit, Theresa May has now formally triggered Article 50, the mechanism in the Lisbon Treaty to formally leave the European Union. And so the clock is now ticking.
The United Kingdom has formally given notice that it's leaving the European Union. A letter signed by Theresa May was handed to the President of the European Council. The Prime Minister said she wanted a smooth and orderly Brexit, but the German Chancellor Angela Merkel has warned that the terms of Britain's divorce have to be settled before any talks on trade can begin.
The Article 50 process is now underway, and in accordance with the wishes of the British people, the United Kingdom is leaving the European Union. This is an historic moment from which there can be no turning back.
Probably our last ambassador to the European Union, handing over the letter at 12:25. The document that says we're on our way out. Theresa May's signature on our departure. Her job now to make it work. This, her hope.
A country that goes out into the world to build relationships with old friends and new allies alike. And that is why I have set out a clear and ambitious plan for the negotiations ahead. It is a plan for a new, deep and special partnership between Britain and the European Union.
In perhaps the most important letter she'll ever pen, the Prime Minister wrote of her hope to give reassurance quickly to the millions of EU citizens who live here and Brits abroad. We should always put our citizens first. We should aim to strike an early agreement about their rights, but no guarantees. The Prime Minister wants a free trade deal with the EU of greater scope and ambition than any before. A bold hope, seen as naive by some, to try to protect firms who do business around the continent from new rules and barriers. There was no overt threat to walk away, but a serious warning. A failure to reach agreement would mean our cooperation in the fight against crime and terrorism would be weakened. We must work hard to avoid that outcome. Her message, the EU needs us. She wants also to agree the terms of our future partnership alongside those of our withdrawal from the EU, to work out how we leave at the same time as sorting out the future. Labour aren't the only ones sceptical she can deliver.
If the Prime Minister can deliver a deal that meets our tests, that'll be fine. We'll back her. More than ever, Britain needs a government that will deliver for the whole country, not just the few. And that is the ultimate test of the Brexit deal that the Prime Minister must now secure.
The clock is ticking now.
Memories of today will be so different. A public party for some.
All right, Boris, I'm inviting Brexit.
Even though that's not actually the Foreign Secretary.
Everyone unite as brothers.
Almost awake for others. That's the sense in the home of the EU.
There is no reason to pretend that this is a happy day, neither in Brussels nor in London.
In a rare interview inside Number 10, the Prime Minister promised, despite all the challenges, our relationship with the rest of the continent will be just as good.
What we're both looking for is that comprehensive free trade agreement, which gives that ability to trade freely into the European single market and for them to trade with us. It will be a different relationship, but I think it can have the same benefits in terms of that free access to trade.
An assertion that will take a lot to prove, one her counterparts in Europe struggle to believe. But Number 10's time for preparation is up. Now time to try to persuade. Laura Kunzberg, BBC News, Westminster.
You know, I think that if they're still going to do free trade, they haven't really left the European bloc.
They can formally say
that they've left, but how's that any different than what we have over here? You know, we have NAFTA, which creates a regional bloc. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing develops. I've kind of believed from the very beginning that this whole Brexit thing was just a maneuver, that somebody wanted it And, you know, we know that the other side take, you know, isn't afraid to take two steps back or one step back so that they can take two steps forward.
That's true. You're right about that. Did occur to me, too, that this might have been in the plan all along. That Britain actually never did fully participate in the same way that the other countries of Europe did. I think they had exceptions under the small island and developing countries rules, you know, because they are an island.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they had always negotiated for themselves exceptions. But well, they need the image of a united Europe.
You know, we look at this thing as being an assault on globalization, but when you really stop and consider, who are the globalists? Does it not always come back to the city of London?
Yes.
So how can we look at Britain leaving the European Union as an assault on globalization when Britain arguably is globalization?
Yeah, they are the original globalists, including their maritime empire based on ports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole global transportation system, with the integrated infrastructure, is the British method of empire.
So. Yeah. So, as I said, it'll be interesting to see how the whole thing develops, and we'll be watching it here. Another thing that developed also is Trump's travel ban. Of course, we know he signed his second executive order, and it didn't take long for the courts to stop that one as well.
Let's begin with the breaking news on the president's travel ban executive order. The Trump administration was hoping that a federal judge would narrow the ruling that blocked the travel ban, but instead the judge this morning extended it. That was a temporary restraining order, and it's now a preliminary injunction, meaning the president's order is going to remain on hold until the lawsuit is resolved. The president called the judge's March 15th ruling against the revised travel ban, quote, an unprecedented judicial overreach. Mark Halperin, whether you like the president's travel ban or not, or the executive order, whatever you want to call it, whether you like the president or not, it's hard to find a lot of judicial scholars that do not identify themselves as progressives as not believing that this is going to be reversed when it eventually gets to the Supreme Court. The question is whether this thing's ever going to get to the Supreme Court or whether it's always going to just bounce around in the Ninth Circuit, either on, you know, lower court level or with the Ninth Circuit itself.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and I have agreed along about the whether this thing eventually would be upheld. I think the current development shows a couple things. One is we're in a different phase now of the Trump administration. We're talking about this as the lead story, but there's not the hysteria and the widespread, news dominance of this decision as compared to what happened just a couple weeks ago. And so there is a little bit of a settling in and a little bit of normalcy. But the other thing is it shows that the president, you know, continues to fight a multi-front war on all of his major initiatives, and as we say, any one just judge anywhere in the country can throw this thing into a complete stop, and so the administration's going to have to adapt to that, and it shows once again the importance of figuring out the legislative piece of this, not just trying to govern through executive orders.
And here we go. You know, the same topic we've been talking about for weeks on this broadcast, Vicki, the tyranny of the courts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Trump, he really can't do anything until he gets that ninth judge, and that's why the Democrats are
fighting
being
tooth
so
and nail.
Crazy,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, about not wanting to confirm him, because it's pretty clear that Trump's order is legal. I mean, it's
well,
you know
no
he has the authority. Yeah, he has the authority to do that. So, but you know, he could ignore the order, but then that's not a good option either, because that is the breakdown of law and order, and that's not a good thing.
Well, I think you and I differ on this. I think that him ignoring it is, I mean, the breakdown of law and order is the courts doing what they're doing.
Well, Trump that's following true. Well, the you're right.
Trump following the Constitution is not the breakdown of law and order. Now, if he were doing it and it was illegal and he continued to do it, then that would be the breakdown of law and order. I think we kind of have to have a paradigm shift, and that's just my opinion, you know, and I know that there, I understand where you're coming from, too, and I understand the concerns. It's a tricky one, but the problem is if you look at the Constitution and you look at the law, who's following the law and who isn't? It's not the courts following the law. So we've had this debate or this discussion, and we'll probably have it over and over again, because certainly this is not something that's going away, unfortunately.
Well, I always worry about the imperial presidency, but then
we
already have it. So
yeah.
So you're right, you know, about that.
Pramila Jayapal is a she's from the state of Washington. I guess she's a senator. No, a House Democrat. She was at a forum where Democrats were speaking, and basically let it be known under no circumstances, under no uncertain terms, what's at stake here with this travel ban. Because if this is allowed to continue to go forward, she came out and she said 50,000 refugees aren't enough.
What's true and what's not true. And then also to try and, you know, take away this narrative that in general immigrants are criminals. And maybe there are a few exceptions here and there, but in general, that's the narrative they're putting out with everything. And so then it makes it very difficult for people to focus on the compassion of kids who are fleeing. And I think on the refugee situation, really figuring out how we go back to realizing that 50,000 refugees is nothing in this world. And we really have a duty to the world and to our history as a country to really make sure that we continue to increase and not decrease those numbers.
Your duty is to increase the numbers.
That makes me angry.
There's no
we don't
this.
Have a duty to anybody except the people in our own country. And we're failing the people in our own country.
But that's how these people think. It's never going to be enough. It's never going to be enough, no matter what you do.
I think they're communist operatives, and I'd like to start rounding them up.
Yep. I agree with you. I can't argue with you there. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. We got Trump care. Which went down into defeat last week, as well I think it should have. I really didn't care whether this thing passed or not, because frankly, it was so much like Obamacare that what's the point?
Well, I don't trust anything that Paul Ryan does.
No, I don't either.
Paul Ryan, when he worked on his health care bill a few years earlier, his health care plan, he was working with Alice Rivlin, who is a Democrat. And I personally think that Paul Ryan is a sociopath. I don't think that guy has the capability for human empathy.
No, I agree with you on that. In fact, I think that definition, you know, that term could be applied to much of Congress.
If they had any empathy when they
got elected, they quickly got rid of it. Over time, or maybe once they got on the plane to go to Washington, D.C., as soon as a few bucks were waved in their face. But this Trump care thing, you know, it was pretty amazing, the propaganda campaign that was coming out leading up to this bill's defeat. You know, all of the people on, they had their talking points, and just to kind of give you an idea of what the talking points were.
30 million people lose their health insurance. I have not seen any Republican studies as to how many of those people will die, but but certainly many thousands of them will die. And in fact, there have been some studies suggesting that thousands of people will die.
The Methodists have said people will die because of this bill. People will die.
Under this proposed health care bill, with no access, very little access to opioid clinics, rehab facilities, what do you tell them other than, you know, you're probably going to die if you get sick?
With the Affordable Care Act, you know, if they pull back coverage from millions of Americans, people are going to die out here.
If this legislation is passed and millions of people are off of health insurance, not able to get to a doctor when they must, thousands of Americans will die.
It took the GOP forever to release this thing. They are like the George R.R. Martins of health care. And just like in Game of Thrones, a lot of your favorite characters are going to die without warning.
Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch started his confirmation hearings this week, and he said that he has his law students think about their legacies by having them write an obituary about themselves. Yeah. Incidentally, that's also part of the Republican health care plan.
24 million Americans will lose coverage under the plan. Now, okay, okay.
Wow.
But keep in mind, that's 24 million people by 2026. And without health insurance, a lot of those people won't live that long anyway.
The Republican health care plan is this. Die quickly. That's right. The Republicans want you to die quickly if you get sick. Remember, the Republican plan, don't get sick. And if you do get sick, die quickly.
Okay, did you get that?
Yeah. that's
this is how people
propaganda.
Are being programmed to think that if you don't have government health care, you don't have Big Brother there to hold your hand and take care of you, you're all going to die.
Well, it's not health care, though, Darren.
That's true.
They're talking about health insurance. Health insurance is not health care. We seem to have the Las Vegas system of calculating insurance premiums, you know, where everybody is self-insured for actuarial purposes, meaning that it's really not in an insurance system at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's like a gambling system, you know. They're calculating the odds that you're going to get something, and they set the deductibles and premium rates so that they never lose any money.
It's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not really insurance at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I maintain that Obamacare was set up to fail. I don't think it was ever supposed to succeed. Anybody looking at this with somewhat of an objective mind has got to say there's no way it could succeed. So I believe it was set up to fail so that they could have the crisis and use it as the springboard to create ultimately where here's where Michael Moore wants to go with it.
Trump and Speaker Ryan changed the bill in the 11th hour to try and get more of the Tea Party Republicans to vote for it. They made the bill meaner. All insurance companies, well, now there it is on the screen, we're not going to have to provide these services even for people who have health insurance. So no outpatient care, no emergency, no ER visits, no, don't get pregnant. We're not covering that. We don't have to buy law anymore. They have to cover any of these 10 things. They put this in the bill to sweeten it for the hateful Tea Party people, and they still couldn't get enough Republicans, even by saying, we'll cut out the ER visits, we'll cut out the maternity and the pediatric stuff. How about that? No, we won't vote for it. We need to do two things, Chris. Number one, we need to push for single-payer insurance, Medicare for all, the kind that Canadians have, the kind that every other civilized democracy on the planet has. We have to push for this because we do need to fix these parts of Obamacare that did cost us votes in November. This has to be fixed. Do not sit around and say, oh, we've got our Obamacare. We don't have to. Democrats, you have to get this fixed.
Oh, really? We got to fix it? You mean it's flawed? But you notice
you know
he said single payer.
I think they got out of it exactly what they wanted to get out of it, which was a collective system for the insurance companies with access to the medical records you know, a system that allows medical records for all of the people in our country through the nationalized medical records system. And so I think it was the system itself that was the objective, not really providing insurance for people.
And you know what frosts me is the fact that Donald Trump now is fighting with the Freedom Caucus, turning on the Freedom Caucus. He's bullying people and saying, you know, all of this stuff, we're going to go after you. They did you a favor, buddy. They did you a favor. The people who were against this bill are your backers. And you better not forget that, or you're going to be a single termer, which I think you're probably already going to be anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know those things that he was saying that Paul Ryan added to the bill to sweeten the deal? I think mm-hmm. those were poison pills. Who would ever vote for a piece of legislation that's supposed to be health insurance when they won't pay for emergency care?
You know, you might be right.
That's
it could very well be that they didn't want this bill to pass in the first place.
Mm-hmm. I really do believe that.
That way they can throw up their hands and say, oh, well, we tried, which is kind of what they did in the first place.
Right, and his whole body language when he was talking about it, that's what his body language said, at least to me. You know, it's he did not appear to be that upset about it. It was just like, oh well,
yeah,
moving on.
Yeah,
I really don't like Paul Ryan. I really
no, I don't
do
I don't
not
like Paul Ryan either.
Mm-hmm.
I had his clip and I took it out because I just it's like who cares. And you know, here's another one I should say who cares, but here's Nancy Pelosi on what she wanted in a healthcare system.
I think, and I want the president to hear me say this, we're ready to talk about how we can make some improvements in the Affordable Care Act. When we did the Affordable Care Act, it was something that took 100 years to do. Was it perfect? No. Would I have preferred a single payer? Yes.
There you go. There you go. So... They're, you know, ultimately, I think that's where they're going to go with this. Obamacare will collapse. People will scream about it. And people will die. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the Obama plan.
Die quickly.
There you go. But
well, population reduction was always in the global plan. I forget what I was looking at the other day. But that is one of the things that, you know, because when you collectivize the entire world in a global system, if you look at the entire population of the planet, you know, you could say that probably, conservatively speaking, 5 billion of those people are just extra.
Yeah.
They're not needed.
They're being obsoleted by technology.
Yeah, well, you're right. It is technology. I was going to say it goes back before that, you know, but really we didn't have industrialization was what the last 120 years, and then information technology and automation really has just been the last 40 or 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, most of the population of the planet really is not necessary for the future. They're just a drag on the whole economy, and everything is about money.
Yep.
So, you know, just don't need those people.
Well, there's another thing I want to talk about. You mentioned depopulation real quick. I had a couple of clips, which I won't play for the interest of time, and they're really, it's a noisy environment anyway, but I did want to call people's attention to it, and I will put them in the show notes. I encourage people to go watch the video. But there is a video where there's an undercover independent journalist, and he's posing as a buyer of fetal tissue for a corporation. And he's talking to a woman to whom, you know, she's an abortionist and a former medical director for Planned Parenthood. Her name is Deshaun Taylor, Planned Parenthood of Arizona, I guess is where she was the director. Deshaun Taylor, Now, as I said, it's a very noisy environment, so I'm not going to play it. But, you know, in the video, you hear her admit that she has to worry about her staffers' feelings if this aborted baby or a baby that she's trying to abort comes out looking like a baby. She also complains about the people who do their paperwork, filling out death certificates, emailing them and calling them, you know, babies. She says that's creepy that they're calling a baby a baby. But the point is that she admits in here, you know, in fact, they're talking about, you know, complying with the law and everything. And some of the things she says, I think, are incriminating. But that's my opinion. But you can view it for yourself. But she basically says you have to see who's in the room. You have to first be mindful of who's in the room. And for this undercover video, the two who did this were slapped with 15 felony charges. 15
felony
charges.
Did they ever go to jail? Did they go to trial on that?
Well, this is something that's developing right now. I'm assuming they were arrested. But it's a huge story, and I encourage people to check it out. I'll put it, as I said, the video in the show notes. I don't really have time to play it anyway. We also have another call on the line from Texas. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Happy Saturday to both of you. I thought I'd give you a call real quick, considering we're talking health care.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the experts, the World Health Organization, the WHO ought to know about health more than anybody else. Here's the World Health Organization's definition for health. Sarcasm inserted ahead of time. As defined by the World Health Organization, health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. Health is a dynamic condition resulting from a body's constant adjustment and adaptation in response to stress and changes in the environment. For maintaining an inner equilibrium called homeostasis. Healthcare, huh?
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. So you can have some dread disease, and as long as you're happy and you're watching some TV, it's all good, right? You're healthy.
Good to go.
Yeah.
No wonder it costs so much. And we thought it was a common cold.
Yeah.
See, guys.
Well, it's good to know. It's good to know, you know.
Thanks for the call, Mark.
You're welcome.
All right, folks. We're just about out of time already. Goes by way too fast. Thanks for being with us. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. Please tell somebody about the broadcast. We are growing, but we'd like to grow more. Need to reach more people. And we'll talk to you again next week. God bless you, folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Darren.
Yep. Thanks, Vicki.
See you next week.
Yep.